the 58104's fastest growing podcast. It's the legend. And the loudmouth.
It's time to fire on up. Anywhere you are, by whatever method you are listening and socially distancing, we thank you for choosing this podcast. Fired up dome this weekend, Grant.
6,000.
Yeah, not exactly ideal crowd conditions. Welcome to the show. We got a lot to cover. We've got a lot of FCS football to go over, predominantly, of course, the green and gold with their first official league win of the year, second official win, I guess, of the year, if you want to call it that. We will talk the Bison, we will talk FCS football, we'll cover college basketball, and of course, we'll talk a little Timberwolves at the end of the show as coaching changes afoot there. But Grant, we play fire on up here as we start, and I know there was a little more fire that could have been in the Bison belly here this weekend, but a win's a win, it's a Valley win, and overall I thought that the Bison performance was good enough, but I'm not saying it was anything world-beating, but this was about as excited as the crowd probably got the whole game.
Yeah, that's probably, or the opening kickoff.
Right.
I mean,
but Bison win 25-7, everybody listening to this knows that by now. Give me your general impressions. We were at the game, so just general impressions of the Bison first outing of the year.
I'm not gonna lie, the opening kickoff, I almost cried. I'm not gonna lie to you, because just hearing that again, and it's just like you're back in the dome. It's been a year, and you're just like, let's just kick the damn thing off. Let's
right.
go. But it's like, but then during the game, it's like there wasn't any juice in the building. You know, like it's just the fans are like, eh. I guess they just got bored. You know.
For those of you who weren't at the game, the seating arrangement. Now, for example, we are on the complete opposite side of where we normally sit.
Bison side.
Yeah, we normally in Legend and Loudmouth, we are in the Legend and Loudmouth suites.
Not really.
At the 20. On the Bison 20 yard line with our crew. This year we are on the visiting side of the field on the 15-yard line.
Is it just me, or is it fun watching like the quarterbacks at the signals? The quarterback.
It is, but it is a very different experience when you watch a game, again, for how many umpty-ump years we've been watching the game from the same seats, and then all of a sudden you're on the opposing team's sideline, and we're like, Jim Tressel is literally within reaching distance or spitting distance of us.
Right. It's like, the helmet's on the other side of the field. I think I look to my seat, I look like, right, where's the helmet at? Oh,
yeah,
it's on the opposite side.
And it, no more do you see that more when you're watching a hand, you know, normally right-handed quarterbacks, and it looks like everything is backwards when you're sitting on the other side of the field. So, very different in that regard. So, the crowd atmosphere, and again, I get it. It wasn't a very exciting victory, but nevertheless, I never felt at any point that the Bison were in danger of even really remotely being threatened in this game. I not once did I feel like, oh, they might lose this game, or oh, they're in trouble. I never felt they were in trouble at any point.
Once they scored a touchdown, I'm like, maybe they get something going, but then they scored later on. I think maybe the possession or two after. So, the two possessions later, they scored again. Like, okay, I feel better now. You know, it was like, you got stuffed in that third and short, and I'm thinking, damn, don't let them make this a one-score game. But then they make him punt, and then they go back down and score again. So it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but a little nervous, but not really.
I don't think the Bison showed anything in this game. And whether that was by design...
Oh, it's absolutely by design.
Or whether that was...
We both know it's by design.
I just don't think the bias, and with the exception maybe of that funky little fake end around that they ran to Christian Watson...
Well, yeah, but they showed that last year.
Not that way. It was different. And I just thought that the Bison came out, established a little bit early that, you know, hey, guess what? You're not going to score on us anyway. I think it had that same feel, and we talked about it during the game. It had a very Illinois State playoff feel to it.
Like Missouri State kind of feeling to it. Like from last year, where it was 22-0.
Yeah.
It felt like it's just kind of those games where you're not really on your game, but it's Missouri State or it's Youngstown State. They're not going to score anyways. So, I mean, if you don't score, it's not the end of the world.
Youngstown did not throw a pass until midway through the second quarter. And I wonder, you know, had they gone a little more aggressive, if the score would have been higher, because
it would have been higher.
I think they would have made some mistakes, and I think the Bison would have capitalized on those mistakes.
Yeah.
But as it was, once the Bison got up with that early touchdown, and, you know, on that drive, it was the second drive of the game where the Bison just absolutely said, you know, okay. You know, they kind of screwed around at the beginning, and then Seth Wilson went down again, and we still haven't heard anything on his injury. But, you know, the field position, at least, there was a kick out of bounds, they got a first down, they got inside the, you know, they were in Youngstown territory and punted. And Youngstown started at their own field. And I feel like Youngstown spent almost the entire game playing inside their own 25.
Yeah, trying to run the ball. Yeah. But just throwing a stat here. They ran the ball almost the whole first half. They got a yard and a half average per rush.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to establish the run? That ain't establishing the run. The Bison averaged 6.1 yards per carry. I don't know if they're trying to see what they have or if they're just trying to see, like, can we throw it? Can we run it? It just seemed like they wanted to run it the whole first half and pass it the whole second half. Mm-hmm. It was just like, see what works, I guess.
The first Youngstown pass I saw was at 9:05 of the second quarter.
Oh, God.
When Craig Kraft threw his first pass. That's pretty amazing.
Oh, my God.
But the Bison start out, stall out on the opening. They punt. They get the ball back from Patty Lynch. Oh, hi-yidi, hi-yidi, hi-yidi. But he's an Australian, so I guess I can't really do that.
Yeah,
okay. And then they come out and, you know, not any spectacular notion on the drive that they had. It was efficient, let's say the least. I mean, none of the plays on the drive were really big. You know, 8 yards for Johnson, 8 yards to Cole Jacob. Jake Lippe, but the ball bounces up to him. That was a little scary. You know, Gindor for 11, Kobe for 7, Christian Watson for 5, Ganella for 5, Nolan for 6, Kobe's. Until they get to Kobe's touchdown, and of course they get the old 2-point play, and it's 8-0.
We looked at Terrell like they're gonna do the 2-point the first time they do it.
Yep.
I mean, they're just going to do it.
Surprised how much Jake Lippe was involved in the offense early.
I didn't think they would use him as much, but you gotta get Watson the ball. I don't care if he's covered or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got a cannon like Zeb's got.
Yeah, and he wound
just
up.
Just let him fly.
And he did, and then the one play was a pass interference penalty, right, which was, you know, didn't do much.
It seems like they only sent him deep. Like, he can do other things, just go deep. I mean, the dude can, he's got size on everybody.
So, Bison really couldn't get anything going on the next couple drives. And then they wound up, you know, about midway through the second quarter, they put together a scoring drive there with probably Nolan's best drive throwing the ball. He hit Lippe for 11, he hits Jacob for 13, and then kind of stalls out when they get, just when you think they're going to go in and get that, you know, really the put-away touchdown right away.
Yeah.
You know, they go 2nd and 6 at the 12, and Zeb can't hit Babich.
I think he threw out a wave.
Yeah, and then 3rd down was a strange play. They called the quarterback run, and it was a designed run, and it didn't look good.
No.
And I was a little confused by that. Maybe they're just trying to put something on there that teams are going to have to defend it. Jake Reinholds makes a field goal. At that point, it's 11-0, and you're like, okay, you know, one more score ought to do it. Well, Youngstown gets the ball, and again, They spend the entire quarter in their own end. They start at their own 25.
And end at their own 34.
Right, and so they don't get anywhere. The Bison come back, and they get a first down on that pass interference that I mentioned. But then it's, you know, a couple of short gains. And then on third and nine, Nolan can't hit Watson. They punt, pin Youngstown inside. And again, we're watching them on our end on the 5 yard line.
Five, 14.
They get nothing. They go, and the Bison again get the ball back. Don't do anything with it. Punt it back. And again, Youngstown just runs out the clock for the end of the first half. So at halftime, it's 11-0, and it doesn't look, you know, ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Thought there was going to be a change of momentum at the start of the second half when Jaleel McLaughlin, the return guy for YSU, fumbles.
Overturned.
But it does not get withstand replay review.
Yeah.
And Youngstown then goes on this kind of half-assed drive where they throw a bunch of incompletions at earlier, yeah. But then they string together three or four, and all of a sudden they get down inside NDSU territory, but they can't convert. They punt, and the Bison go on and drive. And that's really was the put-away drive of the game, was that, you know, kind of mid-third quarter.
Yeah.
All stimulated by the big run from Kobe Johnson, who had the first play after the turn, after the change of possession, a nice run there. And then Jalen Bussey finishes it up with the 22-yard touchdown. So you got two explosive plays back mm-hmm. to, you know, in the same drive.
Yeah.
And that's really the point where I thought, well, this one's probably all she wrote. And to Youngstown's credit, they basically take up the entire rest of the third quarter, drive down and get their own touchdown.
Yeah.
And so it's 18-7 going into the fourth. And I'm still not worried.
No.
At this point.
Mm-hmm.
But Bison punt. They can't get a third and one, which always annoys me.
Yeah.
They send Kobe up.
I mean, what, you couldn't run a play action on third and one right. once in a while? I mean.
And although they kick it away. Youngstown can't get anything going, though, and that was a big sack there by Tony Pierce and Spencer Wagey, who combined on the sack there that basically ended that drive. They have to punt, and then the Bison come back with the put-away drive. But even on that drive, the longest play on there was the Christian Watson sweep. But
yeah.
It was 7, 2, 3, 30, 3, 5, 3, 7. And
sounds like a serial number.
Yeah, it was really workmanlike, and that Bison kind of ran out the clock after that, and nothing much more was done. But I guess the stats tell me that the Bison, you know, dominated this game. It was 243 yards on the ground. Youngstown only ran for 51, like you said, a yard and a half per
yeah.
attempt. I was surprised as much. Youngstown did throw the ball 22 times. I didn't think they got that many.
They threw it 18.
So 171 yards of offense for Youngstown. Obviously, that's not going to get it done. In terms of just overall, you know, penalties, the only penalty the Bison got was a face mask. And by the time kind of the game had been decided, but no turnovers.
Almost a turnover.
Right, but no major mistakes. Everything look in this game was just about as vanilla as it got. It almost resembled in some way like a spring game where you know what you're going to run and you're not changing it.
Yeah, that's just kind of like, but the Bison show the bare minimum in the first week or so of the season. They're going to show you, here's what we do, you know what we do, stop it. And they still scored 25 points. So.
The defense looked fantastic. And I know that Mark Wade and Joe Craycraft are not exactly God's gift to quarterbacking and Youngstown's offense. They have the Ogletree kid, that number 81, who's a giant kid, and
yeah.
he looks like he could
be. He made the head coach look small.
Yeah, and Jake Coates, who we talked about in our shows leading up, probably the only credible offensive threat Youngstown had is the one that wound up catching
yeah,
the touchdown pass.
Yeah, they had a couple
pass.
Good tight ends, but I mean,
yeah, and they're tall, and they're not and small. That zero, yeah. that massive individual that they had out there,
a D line.
Yeah, he was a big boy, and it's not like they don't have some talent. I'm just not sure where they go next.
I don't think they want to use that talent, though.
Well, and that might be what's next for Youngstown. And the schedule doesn't do them any favors because now they've got UNI coming there.
Mm.
And UNI is going to be angry. And that damn penguin noise is going to really piss them off when they get there. Oh, it's horrible. So, my impression is that Youngstown, you know, at the beginning of the year, I had picked him, you know, in the league to go, you know, somewhere in that 4-4, you know, kind of area.
Yeah.
I think they will beat some of the bottom feeders.
Yeah.
And may surprise somebody along the way, but I guess general first impression, I was almost the perfect team for the Bison to play against, who you knew they couldn't move the ball, and the Bison knew they could pretty much run whatever they wanted. If they needed to take a risk, they could, but they never got in a position where they needed to.
I think Youngstown needs to figure out what does Doug Phillips like to do? Does he like to run it? Does he like to throw it? Like to do a little mix of both? I think they're trying to figure out what can we do better than what we do worse. You know, can we run it? I think the quarterback run game with Mark Wade worked pretty damn well in that second half. I mean, Mark Wade's a strong kid, too.
Like, yeah, I think he's the guy.
At some point, I think a third or fourth quarter, I think Jasir and a DN came up to hit him. He bounced right off both. It was a one-yard gain, but it's like, he's that strong. He can just fight off two Bison defenders there's just nothing.
Yeah. Youngstown was 4-14 on third down. Couldn't stay on the field. Again, they had the one sustained drive, but the Bison pretty much, you know, there are several players where Spencer Wagee was living in the backfield. And, so I don't have too much concern about the defense.
No.
At all. Again, offensively, you run for 251 yards total. You lose on some of the fumble stuff, but I liked what I saw out of Kobe Johnson. I think he's going to have to be probably the main guy now, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Jalen Bussey in his change of pace role is phenomenal. He's got a shiftiness. I like Dominic Ganella. We've been talking about him a little bit in the preseason, but he certainly has some ability there. I just feel so bad for Seth Wilson.
Yeah. didn't Keith break or something like that last night? If I could give him some ligaments, I would. I mean, it's just like, he needs a hug. Like,
are you worried from what you saw of Zeb?
To an extent. I think he wanted to throw the big one pretty early in that game, and I'm like, what they should have done is, you know, just go play action first play and saying, Watson, go get down there.
That's what we were talking about. We wanted to see the play action faked at Watson.
He was pretty accurate at times, but I think it's the first game. Remember, it's his first start in 2 years. I mean, he hasn't started since he was at Iowa State.
Right.
I mean, give the man a game or two to at least think, oh man, I'm starting now. There's no Trey Lance behind me I have to worry about.
One thing that is not a question is, I think, the arm strength. We saw him absolutely zip some stuff. I think
he was throwing too hard at Jay Lippe, and he couldn't even get a finger on it.
Right, and I think we'll see that change over time. Also worth noting, the Bison didn't have Hunter Lupke. Was hurt, did not play.
He was hurt, okay.
He's expected, I think, to be back next week. Phoenix Sproles didn't play. So your top receiving targets are not there. Two of your three top receiving targets, probably. I mean, let's face it, he's looked at in the backfield.
Yeah.
And Lupke is compared, Jeff Kolpak made the comparison that he's the Mike Alstott of the offense, and he'll get some carries.
Yeah, he will.
when you got a third and one or a third and two, I think you're going to see him in those situations.
I thought you'd like that when the fullback gets the ball.
Well, because he's had a little bit of a problem hanging on to it, and that's my only concern about guys that don't handle the ball very often. All of a sudden they get it, and they start to throw it around a little bit, and it drops on the turf.
Mm-hmm.
And in an eight-game season, turnovers and ball security are going to be such a big... Well, you saw it with Southern Illinois, and we'll get to that in a little while, what their ball security is like. So
zero.
I'm not too concerned about, because I think this was probably the way it was planned, is that the Bison knew they were probably going to win this game by a few touchdowns anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've always seen with the Bison, they will take the element of risk off the table.
Mm-hmm.
And not show you they will do the bare minimum needed to win.
They'll show you the basic rollout, the dive, the toss, the sweep. They'll show you that stuff, like a basic drop back pass, maybe. But they're not going to show you. I mean, they'll show you reverse maybe, but they're not going to show you the very complex play action or that really cool sweep they got. Or they're not going to show.
Right, you're not going to see a lot of exotic.
They show the 2-point conversion because they want that on tape for teams to look at. So yeah, they got to prepare for it. But
the fake punt's coming at some point.
They've ran a fake punt since...
It's coming.
2011?
You wait. That is coming.
When was they ran a fake
punt? I honestly thought they might run it. There was one of those punts later in the game where it was 4th and 2 or 4th and 1. I'm like, he's got 3 to this side. All he's got to do is take the snap, and he's got it. And it didn't do it.
Wagner or the up back?
Wagner. Okay. I thought Wagner could have made that. But so, lest we worry about the Bison offense only scoring 25, because again, average Bison fan says the Bison should win every game 50-10. 52-10, right? Okay.
They should score 35 a game at least.
Right. It shouldn't even be a question. But time to dip into the loudmouth vault of nerdiness.
Yes.
Okay.
Stats.
Stats. All right. So lest you worry, the Bison only scored 25. Okay. I call NDSU's philosophy, and this is my own term here, mm-hmm. it's called Bison Blackjack. All right?
21, baby. Hit me.
Hit me. The Bison's goal is if you can hold your opponent under 21 points. 21? 21 points. Bison Blackjack, all right? Mm-hmm. Here's why. 138 games now, including the two in this, whatever we're calling this season. Bison played 138 games. That dates back to the national title run starting in 2011. Mm-hmm. Okay? Of those 138 games, the Bison have given up 21 or more points 29 times. Okay? For those of you doing math in your head in the car, that's 21% of those games. Okay? Simplified further, one out of every five games the Bison play, they give up 20 points. Okay? Mm-hmm. 21 points, I should say. Now, geez, loud mouth, that seems like a pretty good recipe for success. You'd be right.
It is.
Not only do you have to score 21 against the Bison, you better make sure the Bison don't score more than 21. Of the 29 games I just referenced, the Bison are 23-6 when they in these situations. So that means that the Bison still win 80% of the time they give up 21 points. All right? The six games they lost, Youngstown 2011, lost by a field goal. UNI 2014, the destruction game when they went down to Cedar Falls and got worked 23-3. Montana in the smoke 2015. Mm-hmm. South Dakota, the Carson Wentz gets injured game, right? JMU in the 2016 semis, and South Dakota State, the last loss in 2017. Those are the six games. And keep in mind, again, in four of the games I just mentioned, the Bison got over 21 or over. Mm-hmm. Okay? The other two losses, everybody remembers, are the double pick six game of Indiana State and South Dakota State in 2016 winning 19-17. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, of the eight losses, by the way, five are by one score. Only three two-score losses in 10 years. Mm-hmm. Okay? Unbelievable. So, if you look at the games where the teams got 21 on NDSU, you could make a good case that a good chunk of these were blowouts. Missouri State's done it twice. Neither game was close.
Yeah.
Western Illinois has done it twice, including last year. Neither of those games were close. Okay? Amazingly, UNI has done it five times to NDSU.
Yeah.
Amazingly enough.
And they won.
And they were 3-2 in those games.
Oh.
Okay. Actually, I take that back. They were 4-1.
Yeah.
Bison were 4-1. The only one they lost was that.
Am I forgetting a game?
South Dakota State's done it three times.
Shocking.
Again. And Eastern Washington did it twice. Once in overtime, the 50-44 game, and the other in a national title game, which was legit because the game was still in doubt before Stick scored. Yeah, it was 31-24.
I think the Bison took their foot off the gas.
But if you look at a few of these other games, the Gophers scored 24. That game wasn't.
Not close.
No.
Over by halftime.
Kansas State, obviously, that game was close.
That was close.
Coastal Carolina had 32. Illinois State 27 in the national title game.
Yep.
Montana, the 38 we talked about. South Dakota's done it twice. Once they won. The other was that 28-21 win in Vern, which was a closer game than most people thought. Southern Illinois did it once, 35-29. That was in 2015. Iowa, of course. JMU, of course, we've talked about. Delaware got 22, or should I say Michigan?
Yeah, Michigan.
And our good friends from Central Arkansas did it here in the October one-off game. Mm-hmm. So, in none of those games, Eastern Washington by far hung the most on NDSU of anybody at 44. And then Montana had 38. None of the rest of them got anywhere near close to 38. Coastal got 32, South Dakota State 33. Point to all this, the Bison don't need to have a prolific offense to win these games.
Helps, but
it certainly doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
But it is not essential for the Bison in this run to score a whole bunch of points and win when it's tough for teams just on a regular basis to score 21 on them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Pretty damn hard.
Pretty hard. And I think people also need to realize that the Bison stats this year are going to be pretty pedestrian compared to other years because there hasn't been the opportunity to beat Butler
mm-hmm.
and to beat, you know, nobody gives a shit State.
Or Michigan.
Right, or Michigan. They're going to be grinded out tough games that I think score comparisons this year are going to be damn near impossible to make.
Yeah, because you can't judge JMU and Elon from... This annoys me because people like to compare the two schools, JMU and NDSU, because of their conference schedules. If you compare that, that's BS, because you see what JMU's schedule looks like? It's horrible.
Yeah, and you also can't, this year, it's almost in some cases where, you could have half your offensive lineup for COVID one week.
Yeah.
That could happen.
And I mean, and the Bison are playing ranked teams almost every week, so... I don't like hearing people saying, you know, JMU's better, look at their schedule. Mm-hmm. The Bison play at least three or four ranked teams every year. JMU maybe plays two. And the Bison routinely have to prove themselves every year.
Right. So I don't think there's any question the Bison have work to do. Do I think they played their best game? No. But it looked like the first game.
Yep.
And the goal of the first game is always not to get surprised, and it's to win it. And in a season where you only get to play nine, now you got two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge because it all works out to making sure that you can get to 8-1, 7-2. 7-2 should get you in. But
yeah.
And that's really what you're concerned about this year is getting in. It isn't about, you obviously want to go 9-0, get the top seed, win the Valley, da-da-da-da-da. But you need to get to 7, and that's the first key is to mm-hmm. get to 7. And based on how this is looking now, you know, they can get to their 7. You know, if they handle Southern Illinois, which they should, okay, then they go Missouri State, and then it's Illinois State at home, and then it's UND. You would think by the time they get to late March, they should have it almost about locked up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we go next. Yep. Southern Illinois. We'll talk more about the Salukis on Thursday when we preview the game. And we'll talk about them here in a few minutes. But let's take a look at the rest of the FCS weekend and what we kind of went into. Let's start with Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought South Dakota State and UNI played a pretty good football game, yeah. All things considered.
Mm-hmm.
What I was surprised about, though, Grant, was how much UNI, I guess, how much they weren't able to move the football. I guess their offense wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be with Isaiah Weston, who got hurt, didn't play much. They looked slow,
mm-hmm.
and I think that killed them in the end.
I mean, they only had 28 yards rushing in the whole game.
Yeah, and that's what we had talked about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, Don Williams is a great running back, transfer from Kansas.
Looked like he was.
Who the hell cares if he transfers from Kansas?
Yeah.
That's like coming from, you know, Missouri State or something. Like, he ain't going to do anything. It wasn't good. I mean, McElwain, tried to run 7 times, he finished with 0 yards rushing. So, I'm just like... Yeah, he ran it in once, but it's just like they just look lost. They just don't. Without Weston, they're done.
Did you think that South Dakota State, and Gronowski, Mark Gronowski, the quarterback, I played a solid game.
Yeah.
But I don't think they looked like they were anything special either.
No, I he looked pretty, he looked like a freshman up there. I mean, he got, you know, strip sacked from behind, and he's got to be aware of that and get rid of the ball, but it's just like, you know, he was okay. And Jabori wasn't playing. I don't know if there's
some rumors about Jabori that, and Don Izzo won't talk about it on the air, but something's going on there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's disciplinary. I don't know if it's injury.
The injury's still bothering him.
Something's going on down there. But honestly, I thought Gronowski, you know, he's a bigger kid. He can certainly run the ball.
Yeah, he had 24 yards and a touchdown.
I thought Pierre Strong looked like his normal self. He
annoying as hell.
He's good.
He only had 31 yards rushing, though.
No, he didn't. He had 91. He had 91 yards rushing.
You sure?
Yep. Okay. I'm sure of it. The guy I liked for South Dakota State was Zach Hines, the tight end. He was a force in there. He had 90 yards.
Yeah.
The Janky twins.
Yonke.
You know, Yonke, sorry.
Jackson and Jaden.
Jackson and Jaden. Both caught, Jackson caught a touchdown pass. I thought they looked very good. They were a little careless with the football, as we noticed. Gronowski coughed one up, and that was a key play in the game.
Yeah.
Northern Iowa, of course, had their own miscue on special teams where they got a punt blocked. So
Cardinals sent a special team.
Can't do that. And Northern Iowa, again, no catches for Isaiah Wesson, who got nicked up during the game. The guy I liked for Northern Iowa was number 4, Quan Hampton, who was a, you know, and of course he had 7 catches for 65 yards. He was fun to watch. He was all over the field. He was kind of like the Ryan Smith kind of version that the Bison used to have. But honestly, McIlvain spent a lot of time running around doing nothing.
Yeah.
And I thought Northern Iowa's defense at times looked lost. Like Strong had a couple of cutback lanes that were wide open.
There, yeah.
And I thought that really hurt UNI, just the big plays that he had. You know, that long run he had for 32 yards early. They left him wide open at the end of the game in the flat on that flat route.
They got covered better.
That was just poor. And I think UNI is in trouble. And I don't think going to Youngstown is going to be an easy win for them.
No.
But it really does now set them up on their heels already to almost run the table before they get to NDSU.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure this UNI team that I saw out there is capable of doing that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure who on this schedule is really going to trip them up too hard. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of the teams yet.
Uh-huh.
But it sure seems to me like they're going to have to beat everybody else now. Because I think two losses, and if the two losses are to SDSU and NDSU,
well, I mean
that could be a problem.
Well,
the only thing that UNI benefits from on this schedule, though, is they do not play UND, and that's a key. They will avoid UND this year.
Okay, if they lose two games, it's UNI. They're getting in the playoffs.
I don't think with two losses they do.
Are you sure when they're to the two nationally top 5 ranked teams? You got to think it's UNI has had really bad like 7-4 seasons. They've still gotten into the playoffs.
UNI has to play like they have to go undefeated.
Yeah, and they won't. But it's just like,
but they have to play like
right,
it.
Right, but UNI they always lose these kind of games they need to have.
And yes, but not in conference like this. They lost that game at home. And here's the other thing. They're going to lose if they do lose to NDSU. That will mean that they have lost to both the Bison and the Jacks at home this year, where they were supposed to be the favorite in both games.
I don't think they'd be the favorite against the Bison necessarily, but they
were. No, but some people
against the Jacks they were.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just like, if they lose two games and say Sam Houston loses two games, them or Sam Houston. I mean, really. I mean, it's just, they're going to be compared to some Big Sky or some Southland school. I mean, they're good. They're getting in above a Southland school.
And the rankings, which we'll get to later, reflect that, too.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Saturday game, because I think that, to me, was a... I think we neither of us were surprised
a reverse ass-kicking.
Neither of us were surprised South Dakota State won the game. The line was 3.5. They won by 4.
Meanwhile,
to be expected.
Meanwhile, a reverse ass-kicking here.
I'm totally confused by what I saw in the game between Southern Illinois and UND. And
yeah,
I thought that Southern Illinois was so much better than what they showed. They got run. And I'm not just talking about the five turnovers that they had. One of which was the fumble six, I think. It was a fumble that they picked up as a scoop and score. Holy crap. For a team that handles the ball, running the ball as much as they do, they got 90 horrible. Yards. They got 90 yards, and they lost three fumbles.
Yikes.
Avante Cox, their big receiver, he was fine. But Elliott, 39 yards. Javon Williams had 29 yards. Cox had a reverse for 29 yards. Nobody else. And then Kerry Lyles got hurt. He's out. Don't know if he's going to play this week. So they left it to Nick Baker, the touchdown maker, to try to do something.
Baker, the touchdown
maker. And all he did was go out and throw it 23 times and get picked twice. Meanwhile, Tommy Schuster for
UND,
a very pedestrian 118 yards, but he threw three touchdowns. And then they had, give me Vaughn! Quincy Vaughn, that is. Quincy Vaughn, who is apparently the running quarterback of the system, went out there and carried a couple times. You know, nothing spectacular receiver. You know, they had a few to Garrett Mogg.
Mogg.
Bo Belquist caught his first touchdown. Dalton Gee. Brett Finke, the fullback, caught a touchdown. But everybody's talking about the kid from Moorhead, Otis Wee.
Wee!
Now, I know that the media has already anointed him the best running back in the conference because he's got these, you know, piston-like legs that fire. He's got the spin move. He looks good.
Stiff arm.
Stiff move. Putting on a show. However, let's pump the brakes a little bit on Otis, who, by the way, couldn't stay on the field because he wasn't academically eligible last year, so he doesn't appear to be the brightest guy in the world. But let's not forget how shitty Southern tackled in that game.
That was awful.
I know that Wee's got skills, and I know he can bounce off tacklers, and I know that. But let's, if you go back and look at some of those runs,
some piss poor tackling.
That's some bad tackling. And I think also you forget how good Jeremy Chin and how good
he
was.
Could stuff the run as a safety.
And he's the only guy that Southern Illinois could get to tackle Lance at all in that game last year. And if he's not part of that defense, I think it really showed up on Saturday.
Yeah, and the Southern Illinois, Nick Kill said, we're trying to get back into playing shape. Well, I don't really get how you're not in playing shape. You haven't played a game in a damn year.
UND didn't seem to have trouble
and
being
then
in
you
playing
get
shape.
And then you get the Bison next week. I mean, that is not the way to start off a season here, Nick. I mean, we're trying to get back into playing shape. Well, you better start with a tackling circuit. That might help you. I mean,
well,
God damn, that was bad.
Southern Illinois is in some serious trouble now. The Bison come to Carbondale.
The playoff chance might be screwed right here.
They got to go to Youngstown, and then UNI comes to town.
Uh-oh.
It could be over early. What was the old Yogi Berra line? It gets late early here. It's getting late early.
But it ain't over till it's over.
Well, we'll see. But so we'll talk a lot more about the you know, Southern Illinois next week, but they're on Thursday, but that was bad. So, and the rest of the Valley teams, as you remember, Western Illinois and USD got pushed back to the last week of the year, as did Illinois State and Missouri State.
Frozen
so,
field.
The quote-unquote frozen field. So, national games of note, there weren't a lot of any other surprises, I guess, Grant, if we can classify them as such. We had, as we expected, if you look at the top 25 going into the week, and we'll get to the new rankings here in a minute, not a lot of shocks here, I guess, from my perspective. It was just a question of how much JMU was going to win by. They won easily over Morehead State. No, not that Morehead State. 52-0.
Yeah.
And as expected, Nichols just spanked.
Run on JMU for a second. Yep. I was reading Instagram comments because the new poll came out. JMU should be number one. Really?
Not after that play.
They beat Moorhead State.
A non-scholarship team.
Yeah, a non-scholarship team. That's not a great player.
That's like telling me that Nichols went 87-3, and they should.
And
be
that's a really
one.
Impressive victory.
Against the D2 school.
D2 or D3, one of
the two. Wofford beat Mercer 31-14.
Who cares?
Well, that's a game I told you to watch, and Mercer almost did cover it. East Tennessee, a little bit of a surprise, beating Samford in an Ohio Valley game. Elon hung on to beat Davidson. That's not good for Elon because Davidson non-scholarship.
Not very good.
Furman over Western Carolina, 35-7. A lot of games got postponed. But the other one of some note for the weekend, we got to acknowledge Tarleton State, who the Texans beat New Mexico State, who apparently is, I don't know what the hell they're doing down there, but Tarleton, so they get another FCS, gets an FBS scalp, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is nice to see. And Tarleton's got the development of something decent down there.
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah. That's it? That's all you got?
Somewhat? Somewhat.
Okay. So, again, not a lot of surprise. Oh, but we also have to talk about a couple other games real quick. Tennessee Tech beats Let's Go P. That was an upset. That's probably the biggest upset of the weekend. Let's Go P. They're now 0-4. They're not going to the playoffs.
Wow.
You know, because they lost their three. The other game of note, and probably more for what happened during it rather than the actual game itself, was the struggle for Coach Prime and Jackson State. 53-0, they beat Edward Waters, which sounds like a brokerage firm that I would buy something from.
Edwards and Waters.
All right. They go out and hammer Edward Waters, but Deion Sanders had all his stuff, apparently his bling and everything, stolen in the locker room, and then apparently that didn't happen. It's complicated, but that'll get more FCS attention than anything else.
They will get the most attention because it's Deion Sanders.
Pathetic.
I got a couple good recruits. We're not like they're just another random HBCU school. I mean, you know. They got a couple great players. It's Deion, but I mean, it's just like.
So as a result of all this, we didn't have a lot of movement in the top 25. Grant, if you want to go through that, let's take a look at the top 25 and see where everything shook out today.
All right. Well, number one's the Dakota Dynasty, two the runner-up JMU, three the Jacks, four Weber, five UNI.
So UNI and SDSU swapped spots, right?
Spots, correct. Ivanova six.
Villanova.
James Robinson University 7. Yeah. Kennesaw 8. Nichols 9. Furman 10. Waffle House 11. Sorry, Wofford 11. EW 12. Undercuffer 13.
That's Albany.
Yeah. UND 14.
UND moved up to 14.
14. 14.
Seriously, okay.
Honestly. The Dungeon 15, New Hampshire. Jacksonville, give me a Z. Jacksonville Stakes. Everybody's name ends with a Z on there.
It starts with a Z.
Slapnut 17, Sam Houston.
That's Sammy.
18, Southeastern Louisiana. 19, McNeese. 20, Monmouth. 21, SEMO. 22, Tarleton.
In the rankings for the first time.
23, Tennessee Tech. 24, Elon. And 25 is Michigan. I mean, Delaware.
Delaware, okay. So.
Others receiving?
Yeah, real quick.
Austin Peay, Southern Illinois, Citadel, Youngstown.
How does Austin Peay still get votes when they're 0-4?
They had the most of its receiving votes.
Seriously, they're 0-4.
Yeah, 0-4. So Ill, the Citadel, Youngstown for their valiant effort, gets 32 votes.
He gets a participation trophy.
East Tennessee, 23. I realize Instagram things too. Jackson State, why are they not in the rankings?
Seriously.
They got 22 votes. Terrell Owens University, Chattanooga, 21. San Diego, 19. Richmond, 18. South Carolina State got 14 votes. UC Davis, 13. Idaho.
All right, we're getting into nobody cares territory.
Stony Brook got 11. Maine got 7. UT Martin got 7.
All right. Whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So, bottom line, not a lot changed.
No.
Looking ahead to Thursday, we'll preview the games, but next week in the Valley, UNI at Youngstown, Bison at Southern Illinois. South Dakota at Illinois State, SDSU at UND, and Missouri State opens at Western Illinois. So that's what's coming on the weekend to come. We will preview those games on Thursday. We'll have some interesting games coming up here. Most of the other conferences will get started. Not a lot of games jumping out at me right at the moment. We'll take a little deeper dive into some of these other than the Valley games, but not a lot of important game. Big Sky season starts. We do have Southeastern and Sam Houston going next week, so that'll be an interesting one, but lots to come from that side. So an interesting first week of football, to say the least, but We take another look then, Grant, at the landscape overall, and I don't think a lot changed from week one to week two with UND being the kind of the primary, you know, thing that moved around, but overall, a good first week out of the chute, and the quality of play was all right.
Yeah.
You know, some of these games could have looked like disasters, but they were actually pretty decent.
I think actually pretty good. I think all around it was pretty good. I think the broadcasters were pretty good most of these games.
Yeah, shout out to Brian Sean, by the way. I don't know if we talked about it on the show real much, that he is going to miss at least this game and might miss the next few.
Timmer did okay.
Yeah, he was fine. I mean,
my favorite part, the PAT is G-O-O-D. That was great.
That's good. And Kyle Emanuel does a decent job.
He did a good job.
Certainly knows the everything. And the Midco guys did fine with doing that game. Heinrich, like, does everything, I swear to God. But,
he did hockey that night, did basketball last week.
And speaking of basketball, let's dive into that real quick here as we start out here.
The 19 days of some selection Sunday, in case you're wondering.
How did we get that close?
Jeez. I don't know.
Bison split the pair with South Dakota State. And setting
and somebody
up
was pissed on Saturday.
I was not a happy camper.
Somebody was pissed.
I didn't like, first of all, the Bison Friday night, which we kind of were watching both games at the same time, UNI, SDSU, and then we're watching the basketball game. The Bison fought hard Friday night, and it came down to the ending possession where they had a chance to tie.
And
didn't even get a shot off. Then the next night, just to infuriate me even more,
the Jackson.
The Bison go up by like 22 or whatever it was.
Well, I got this game over, right?
And South Dakota State apparently has the greatest press ever invented.
Yeah.
They absolutely made the Bison look like an eighth grade team.
The Bison were up 12 at the half, by the way.
Yeah, and they were up as many as 20.
22. Yeah, but that tells you, Richmond. Eric Anderson coached under you. You should know what he's going to do, all right?
They looked completely unprepared.
They looked unprepared for a trap defense, which I'm pretty sure my middle school team could at least beat. I mean, it's just, it's a basic trap. And, of course, they would kick it to the corner, which you don't do in a trap situation.
Which you automatically get double teamed.
Yeah, and Douglas Wilson got two cheap fouls because of that. But it's just like, you don't pass it to the corner. I mean, there's like two guys back, the inbound, and there's only two guys there. Bring all of them up so at least you can get solid. They can make it an easy basket off of
it. Yeah, it was pretty bad. Fortunately for the Bison, they had established such a lead at that point that the Bison were able to just kind of, you know, hold off and hang on and, you know, just enough at the end to win. But to give you an idea where this game again was at, the Bison had a 67-45 lead.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. It's 67-45 with 13:10 left in the game after Bowden Skunberg gets a three.
Oh, God.
Okay? At that point, the Bison are in pretty good shape. Yeah, we're all feeling pretty good at this particular phase of the game. But in no time at all, the press comes out, and in the span of 2 minutes, the lead goes down to 13 points. Okay?
Yep.
They start at the 12:43 mark. It's a 22-point game. And then it's Dentlinger scoring. It's Dentlinger again. It's Arians. It's Dentlinger makes a couple more shots on the free throw line. Douglas Wilson makes free throws. Shireman makes a three.
The poor free throw shooter just have to sink almost all
his
free throws.
And even though, despite all this, the Bison are slowly getting it. By the time it's the 5.5 minutes to go, it's a 9-point game. All right? And NDSU just can't get any points. In fact, in the last 6.5 minutes, the Bison scored all of, 8 points?
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that they showed a lack of composure. And you know, you absolutely know that is not the last time teams are going to do that to NDSU.
Oh, yeah.
Because they absolutely saw a weakness there.
You know the Yotes will use it.
Yep. And you know that they'll... Now, this is where Richmond's going to earn his money. We'll see if that... what they do against it the next time out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, it's going
to... It was not a good look.
No, but I think... typical young team, taking shots too fast, not waiting for things to develop.
Not understanding the spacing where the ball is supposed to go.
You can still run a set offense. I mean, it looked like we were rushing shots. Of course, you know, Rocky's taking the three-pointer. We don't need to take the three-pointer. And it's just, you can still run your set offense. If something's open, then you take it. But if nothing's there, take your damn time with the ball. Until they take it from you, it's yours unless the shot clock goes off. You can use more time, but I just feel like towards the end of possessions, it's just Griesel ISO. Try to get something other than him. Set screens, move without the ball. Just my knock on Richmond's offense, he got away with it these past couple years because he had such great personnel.
He got great scores.
Yeah, great scores. But now there's no Samuelson to kick out to. There's no Shaheed going to the rack. There's no Ward down low. They don't have that. You have to make and just you stay, sit around the paint, pass on the perimeter, pass on the perimeter, pass on the perimeter. Of course, there's 10 on the shot clock. Like, oh, shit, we got to do something. Just waiting for something to happen and nothing ever happens.
So now, interestingly enough, we were all excited to see how South Dakota and Oral Roberts made out this weekend. Well, that didn't work. Because now, with there was a, I think, some member of the coaching staff or something, training staff, whatever, for USD tested positive for the Rona.
Yeah.
And now there's an interesting scenario. Because the standings now, the way they sit, the Bison are in trouble. And through no fault of
playing... Trouble meaning what are the two seeds?
Playing of the game, no. But the problem is now they could drop down to the three.
How the hell could that happen?
Well, I'll tell you how the hell it could happen. If the Bison don't play this weekend, again, you have to remember that the conference tournament standing is going to be determined by your winning percentage. Okay? You understand that?
Yes, I do.
So, last weekend, with the Bison splitting, the key here is that South Dakota beat Oral Roberts in that one game that they did play this weekend. Mm-hmm. So now South Dakota is atop the conference standings at 10-3 with the Bison at 10-4. Right now, by winning percentage, if it stayed that way, that would be the seeding. Mm-hmm. Problem is, South Dakota State's got two games to play against Missouri, Kansas City, the Ruse, mm-hmm. UMKC. Mm-hmm. South Dakota State is going to need to lose both of those games then, if the Bison don't play. Because if South Dakota State splits, they're 8-4. Okay, and 8-4 will get them a better winning percentage than NDSU.
That's not fair.
It isn't fair. The other part to that equation is if the Bison do play, they're going to have to sweep. And I don't know if that's going to happen down in South Dakota.
UND swept them.
Yeah, true, true.
But then, like, at home, UND doesn't have a home court advantage. I mean, it's just like, they just got lucky twice. I mean, really.
Well, yeah. The Bison are not going to wind up any lower than the three. We know this much because ORU's loss basically knocks them there. And ORU, right now, the way things are shaping up, and I'll be watching this one, if ORU gets UMKC in the first round, probably the best offensive team in the league against the best defensive team.
Again, I think UMKC...
And the winner gets the one.
UMKC is just really aggressive. Really.
You might find this crazy, but this might work out absolutely to NDSU's favor.
Yeah, because just be the two.
I don't want to play UMK. And right now, if the season ended today, and it doesn't, South Dakota's one, NDSU's two, South Dakota State's three, ORU is four, UMKC is five, the Sioux are sixth, Western is seventh. And then it's going to be between Omaha and Denver slugging it out for the whoever gets the 8-9. I'm okay with if Bison have to play Omaha or Western, I'm okay with that in the first round. Because it means I don't have to play ORU and I don't have to play UMKC. And those are the two games I don't want in the first round. I also don't want UND, quite frankly, in the first round.
Oh, for God's
sake. Well, I'm just saying.
It's just Rabracha. Like, that's it. I mean.
So, what happens this weekend, whether the Bison play or not, the remaining schedule, however, it's Omaha, Denver. As it turns out, they're going to basically play a two-game survival series because they're both 1-11. So if they split, I don't know how that's all going to break out on the tiebreaker, but that's what's coming up. So one of those teams is going to get in. UMKC and South Dakota State are scheduled for Friday night, 7:30. We'll see if the Bison game is still, at this point, still on. Right now, If they do play, it's going to be Saturday, Sunday. And those games right now are still on.
Okay.
As of right now.
All
right. So, stay tuned.
Yes.
Because I think we're in for some interesting developments.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't it be something? I mean, that would be the most 2020 thing ever, right? Would be to not win. You could win the conference by not playing.
Yeah. Hate that.
That's kind of where we are.
Yep.
And then we've got a week out to the conference tournament, which will be at the Pentagon this year. And it'll be a distinct...
Again, why not at the Denny?
No people. It's easier to handle the Pentagon. It's set up better for that. It just is.
Okay. Well, we can't social distance at the Denny? I mean, it's big.
Yeah, they're not having any fans at either one of them.
Why not?
It's the way they set it up.
But you can have...
Well, because you can't really afford to lose a conference tournament, frankly. Now, the other problem South Dakota's going to have, if this is a positive test and they can't play, they're going to start to have some issues with actually being able to get into the tournament. And
yeah.
If they can't get in the tournament, I've been told that if they can't suit up and play, they're out. And every team would move up a seed line, and that would mean the Omaha-Denver loser could still be in the tournament, but they would become the 8. Lots to be determined on that front yet. We did find out that the NCAA is going to have some fans in these games in Indianapolis. Apparently, my first 4 ideas are still on the shelf, however, but you know we'll get there.
Yeah.
So we'll anyway, but we do need to spend the last few minutes here. We haven't talked much NBA, but we're going to have to do it tonight.
We're still in the lead.
Seriously, the Timberwolves.
Dumpster fire.
Ryan Saunders after going 7-24 and having the temerity to lose to his predecessor, Tom Thibodeau, and the Knicks on Sunday night. And Grant, you're much more plugged in NBA guy than I am. Was this the right move for the Wolves to make at this time?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I like Ryan as a guy. Young guy. I think the players liked him to an extent. And the only reason he was there, his last name is Saunders. And to the Wolves, the name Saunders is very...
It's royalty.
It was royalty because of Flip. But we're past... Sorry, Flip, but you've been gone for a while now, and Ryan didn't do anything worth a damn for that team. He lost almost 100 games in about 2.5 seasons. He only won about 43 games. That's horrible. With what you had with Cat and an all-star in D'Lo... And you know what? Yeah, I get it. They only played 5 games together. 5 in 2.5 seasons. In a season. 5. That's ridiculous. I get it. Cat was with COVID, and now D'Lo's on the shelf with a knee injury. And can they be any more cursed? It's just ridiculous that they can't keep 2 All-Stars on the floor at the same time. And the Layman and Hernan Gomez is just garbage, but firing Saunders was the absolutely correct move. Look at the guy like Chris Finch in here, who knows a thing or two about basketball, has a pretty damn good coaching record. He's been under Mike Malone, Mike D'Antoni. He's been under pretty good coaches. So, just saying.
Yeah.
Want me to shout out now?
I've never heard of him until the other day. I do know this. However, he got his start here. England, my friend. Jolly old England. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Finch, immortal basketball career, all started with the second tier of British basketball. Wow.
He's not bad.
No.
It's more than Canada.
Chris Finch started his head coaching career with the Sheffield Sharks of the British Basketball League.
Is that like the Shanghai Sharks?
I have bet on many things in my life. I have never bet on the Sheffield Sharks at any point. So he won the regular season title. Yay! There. And then he moved to Germany and coached a team called the 46ers.
Not the 49ers.
Which apparently they've lost 3 from there. A few other stops in there in the European circuit. And then he was the head coach in 2009 of the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, which is a great name,
D-League
by the
team.
Way. That was a D-League team. It was the D-League
back
then.
It's the G-League.
Well, it was the D-League.
It was the D-League, but it's the G-League. So,
Good enough. But he was the D-League Coach of the Year. Dude, I'm telling you, in 2009, it was called the D-League.
It's in 2009?
Yes, in 2009.
But it's the
And then after he was the D-League Coach of the Year, he went on to coach with the Rockets, the Nuggets, the Pelicans, and as of last another night, he was an assistant coach on the Raptors staff with my boy Nick Nurse.
Nick Nurse.
Great name.
Weirdest facial expressions ever.
Right. Okay. Finchie also coached the Great Britain national team.
He quit that.
Resigned after the Olympics in 2012 to focus on his NBA career.
Sure.
Let's be honest here. I'm not thinking he's going to coach a lot of British guys. They're going to be just fantastic basketball players.
Are you Aussie or English?
I'm kind of like going in and out before on that one. So I'm told this is a great hire. It's weird to have it done at this point in the year. I don't know if there's anything that can be salvaged of this year.
No, there's not.
But is it worth giving it a shot?
Yeah.
Again, a casual NBA guy here? I don't know.
It's weird that you hire a coach, you fire and hire a coach midway through the season. It's a little weird. But I don't think teams fire coaches halfway through season and already have a replacement lined up. And you know,
this had to have been in the works for a while, hasn't it?
But Finch is here because relationship with Rosas, the president of the basketball operations,
right.
/GM. But I think, again, this game maybe got a little too relationship, but they work together really well, so I'm just going to say, I trust you, just please win games. I mean, just it really just does get ridiculous that they can't consistently win games with the team that they have.
I would think, again, if you're a Wolves fan, and I don't think there are many out there, I just think that what do you got to lose?
Yeah.
I mean, you have Russell, you have Kat. If Kat wants to stay and they want to build around this group, why not throw Saunders over? You're not going to win this year anyway.
You're going to have Kat consult on all matters.
Well,
I mean, if you want, you're going to have to say, Kat, what do you want to do? Because this is your team. What do you want us to do?
And the other problem here is that not only has Kat not been around most of the year because of COVID and all this other stuff, but let's remember this team only played, you know, a handful of games before the last. Before the bubble and everything else, they didn't make the bubble. They didn't make the bubble. They only played a few game, you know, a few dozen games.
Yeah.
Before, so I really think that that's hampered, especially with these young teams that haven't been able to develop. And the Wolves are a classic case. But I look at this roster and I'm thinking, God, you got a bunch of guys that can't shoot the three, and all they do is shoot threes. They should be pounding it inside. They've got talent. They got Russell to distribute the basketball. They got Rubio. You know,
why is he there? He looks like we're turning water into wine.
Everybody loves Rubio. He does look like Jesus a little bit. So
he turned water into wine. Well, okay, he's there for the fans, really. It's like, oh, we love you, Ricky. You were the guy drafted before.
They do love
Steph Curry.
There is an unhealthy love for Ricky.
I've never liked him. I never will like him. Don't take this the wrong way, but Malik Beasley going to jail might not be the worst thing for this team because Anthony Edwards gets to start then.
That's where we're going. By the way, Anthony Edwards with apparently the greatest dunk in the history of mankind that he posterized. And you know, the joke was that Finch loved the dunk so much he decided to come coach the team because it was against the Raptors. So, again, I'm an open mind. I'm a casual NBA guy. I don't really care that much, but I mean, guess if it's another time for the Wolves to start another different path, and hell, the other 25 you followed haven't worked, so why not try another one?
I know, but it's just, they have players on this team that's just like, why are they there and what are they doing for this team? It just doesn't look like
who's your daddy and what does he do?
Yeah, I mean, like, for like, Jaden McGinnis could start in this league.
Well, you know, I still can't name half the damn roster anyway.
Jake Lehman, why the hell is he there?
I just like my boy Naz Reid on there.
I like him, it's just, I look at this roster, like Jalen Noel, why are you here? Juan Hernan Gomez, you eat up too much salary.
Oh, I hate that guy. Yeah.
I mean, you can't, Lehman and Hernan Gomez, they don't do anything for this team. I don't know why they're here.
They take up cap space.
Man, all they do is take up cap room. The Wolves don't do anything in free agency. Nothing. They're too conservative with what they're doing. Maybe you should be aggressive and say, Kat, what do you want us to do?
Be aggressive.
Exactly.
Be aggressive.
Just consult Kat on all matters.
If you're going to build around him, you should do that anyway.
Yeah.
I agree.
Also, Jarrett Culver and D'Lo are out for an extended period of time. But it's just like, Ed Davis is, you know, your veteran on this team, I guess.
They'll be lucky to win 20, won't they?
Yep, they will. They might not win 20.
They got 7 right now?
They got 7.
I think 20 is a reasonable expectation, don't you?
It's just confusing that you have...
See, and it's people like you that want to be Wolves fans, but you can't.
Well, I mean, I kind of have to, so...
You don't have to do anything, but... It's tough to watch that.
I kind of hate because you are.
I watched the first few. You know, I watched those opening couple games.
Like, damn, they look good. Like, they beat the Jazz on the road. Yeah, like, this looks good.
And I'm totally now. I don't care, and worse yet, now that I have football to watch for another couple months, I really don't care. And I'm probably going to watch more college basketball
than you will the Wolves.
Yeah, but that's the par for the course.
But I don't watch NBA basketball. I'm not going to sit down and watch a basketball game.
Yeah, there's really not much point. Not at this point in the year, anyway.
Like, you know, Lakers are going to win. They're up by 16 or whatever against the Wizards at halftime, and it's just like. It's just not watchable sometimes. Yeah.
And it won't be until you get closer to the playoffs and it starts to mean
more. Even during the playoffs, it's like, oh, it's the Lakers and the Spurs in the first round. 20 years ago, they won a hell of a matchup, but that's not what we're not Bill Walton ain't doing color now. So.
Well, and then the other advantage now, too, as they come down the stretch here, is that baseball will start to also percolate a little bit in the background. And
yeah.
With FCS football and with college basketball and everything else, there'll be plenty on the sports calendar to look at coming up here, which is, however, why we have to cut it off for this evening, because we're already way over time. A lot to cover, as I said. We got through most of it, though. It'll be a busy next few weeks coming up. Hey, get in touch with the show. Our email is legendandloudmouth@gmail.com. That's legendandloudmouth@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @legendloudmouth. That's @legendloudmouth. And check out our website, legendandloudmouth.com. That's legendandloudmouth.com for links to our previous shows and why forever and always Coastal Carolina will suck. Grant, how do we find
you? Follow me on Instagram and Snapchat @accurateLegend1. Follow me on TikTok @accurateLegend. Follow us on Instagram at @legend_loudmouth_pod. @legend_loudmouth_pod. If you like the show, hate the show, we don't care. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Thursday, we will talk Valley football. We will preview the weekend. We'll preview the Summit League final weekend. Hopefully, there are some games to be played. Break down the FCS spring schedule. I guess we're into week 3 now, as we're looking at it. So, should be fun. That'll be the routine. Bison Southern Illinois and the rest of the field to preview. Buckle up, folks. Going to be a fun next 6 to 8 weeks, isn't it? We'll see you next time. Thursday night previews on The Legend and The Loudmouth.